I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I am J-Clone 23.
And today we have tales from the darkest corners of the earth.
Darker than a inside of a coffin on a moonless night.
I didn't know where you were going with that, so I was just like chocolate. That's when you first said darker than, that's what...
It's like, uh-oh.
Darker than dark chocolate.
Right, yeah. No, I got that from Beverly Hills Ninja.
Today we're going to talk about cryptids.
Oh.
Huh. A big surprise.
Go figgy.
No, do you know what today's topic is?
I'll answer that with another question. Do I ever know what today's topic is?
One out of probably five.
And
it's because I tell you right before.
I think Meatloaf said that one out of five ain't bad.
Did he?
Oh, no, that's two out of three. No.
Two out of three ain't bad.
I do not know what today's subject is.
No, we're going to talk about out-of-place animal populations.
Ooh, okay. Oh, like full-on established populations?
Yes. So we've talked about... I have this list. Most of these come from a Mysterious Universe article written about these. But I have another list of ones that we know about that are not as popular.
Oh, okay. That's exciting.
So we're going to talk about a whole bunch of animals that are known animals that have established populations where they should not be.
So this is just an invasive species list?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Invasive or non-native, it depends on... It's kind of a split hairs definition.
I guess, yeah. They both...
So here's... I'll give you an example here for Ohio, for everybody at home. And actually, for our Australian listeners, it's the same fish.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So brown trout are stocked in Ohio. So they are not native to the U.S. They're not native to Ohio. Or they're not native to our part of the U.S.
Okay.
There are brown trout populations that hit like the northern stuff from the ocean run stuff, but not here. We don't have brown trout. But we stock them. So they don't count those as invasive. They count those as non-native.
Gotcha. Because they were placed here.
Yes. I don't agree with that definition because they are destroying other native species and food sources for native species.
Well, if they were invasive, then you'd have a problem for stalking them.
They are a problem in a lot of areas.
Like right, but...
Michigan, for example, has gone the other way of trying to kill all the brown trout in areas because they stalked them, and then they became invasive, and now they're killing all the native trout populations.
So they're trying to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And Ohio's fallen in the same boat. Our native trout populations were already so decimated that we just didn't notice... Till it was too late. But that's like I said, it's a splitting hairs definition.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these fall into both. Some of these are, you know, pets that got out and they're like, oh, that's cute. You know, it's still hanging around. And then there's four. And there's 12.
Oh, like, for example,
you probably got one on my list. So don't.
Okay. Yeah.
Save it.
Is that what we're talking about? Maybe around your mom and dad's house? That's more what I was thinking of.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
So the little birdies that your brother caught on trail cam?
No, woodcocks are native.
Okay, well, I was going to say, for example, though, your mom, so this is not on the list then, woodcocks?
No, because woodcocks are supposed to be here.
Okay, so I'll just tell them the story. Your mom thought that quail may have been released.
She thought, yeah.
Yeah.
It was my non-native quail.
Yeah.
It was woodcocks, which are native little like birds related to sandpipers.
Right, which those are really neat, and I hope, and you're in a lucky, or maybe lucky position, your brother with his trail camera. Mating display.
It's very hard to actually get video of them because they're extremely shy birds.
So stay tuned.
Yeah, I have one little video of it dancing a little bit, but going.
You showed me. That was awesome.
It was clearing out the runway.
Yeah. So it's happening as we speak.
So yeah, these are basically, you know, cryptids is one of the definitions of cryptids.
Right.
Out of place animal.
Like our t-shirt you can find on cryptidthecorn.com
/shop. There you go. I think that's right.
I think so too. I don't know.
But out of place animals. So this is like a step past that there was enough of them or they're not very shy. So like when we talk about hyenas in like the alien black cat phenomena, even though they're predators, they are much more shy animals.
Right.
When some of the animals on this list either do not care if they're seen or they had habituation with humans as original stock. So they're just not. I mean, they're not like going to let you come up and pet them, but they're not like super wary of people either.
Right.
Like, you'll see on this list. But yeah, I mean, do you have any other ones you have off the top of your head and see if you can?
I definitely know a couple, but I don't want to ruin them.
No, go ahead. If you think of one.
I definitely know one and because I know it's on your list.
Is it a very heavy one?
For a bird.
Oh, for a bird.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead and say it.
Michigan.
Oh, yeah, they are around here.
Okay, so yeah, we'll wait for that one.
Yeah, I was like, yes, they are.
They are a heavy bird.
They are heavy. The third heaviest bird.
Aha.
Alive. Many of the strangest populations of remarkable out-of-place animals are from those who have mysteriously managed to end up on islands.
Mm-hmm.
This is animals. That's a whole subcategory in this field. It's just you show up to an island, and there's a weird animal in there that you know exists somewhere else. And you're like, how did you get here?
Right, yeah.
99% of the time, we dropped them off.
People.
There are ones that we didn't. Like hurricanes swept out and like a whole colony of stuff. Like there's, for example, bats.
Mm-hmm.
Bats have ended up in like crazy islands like way out in the Pacific.
Oh, yeah.
Where they could not fly to.
Yeah.
So the leading thought is, one is like hitching rides on the Pacific Islanders' ships. Like,
oh, yeah,
a rookery of bats hiding up in like the mast or something like that.
I could see that.
The other one is this is common too, hurricanes and stuff like that.
Big storm systems.
They blow whole trees over. The bats will just kind of huddle onto it.
Hmm.
Because they won't leave, they won't fly super far away from the quote unquote home.
Gotcha.
So if they can eat enough bugs until the tree hits an island or something like that.
Right, gotcha. Oh, they'll keep flying back to the tree and land on it and floating. Any chance it could have, like, something could have swept them up in the atmosphere and then dropped them?
So jet streams, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Huge weather events. Bats are tiny. They are great flyers, but they are tiny.
Right.
So large wind currents can just rip
tear
them
up.
Yeah. Madagascar gets new bats, like, same species, but new bats every once in a while because of that.
Oh, okay.
Like giant gale winds will just
blow them in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
But if you look at like crab fishermen, the lobster, the famous lobster TikToker.
Not familiar.
Anyways, they get birds like 40, 50 miles out sometimes that aren't supposed to be there. And it's every storm system, like chickadees and that kind of stuff. They have a whole little box they have on their ship for them.
For the birds.
So they always net them up and put them in there and drop them back off.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're stranded.
Oh, because seagulls are eating them.
Oh, okay.
All right. But yeah, a lot of them are on islands. Sitting within Scotland's Loch Lomond is a small uninhabited island called, I'm going to try to say this for you, Inchoconan-Achin.
Okay.
It's all C's, O's, I's, and H's.
That's a lot.
There's only four letters used, but man, there's a lot of them used.
Yeah.
Which, aside from its scenic quality, does not have much to see, and it's relatively obscure. That is except for the roving wild. Okay, before I tell you, what animal? You're on an island inside of a loch in Scotland. What animal would be just, you're walking, you know this animal, you just look over and see it like, that's not supposed to be there.
A sheep?
In Scotland?
I don't know.
Gotland's covered in sheep and grass.
Well, yeah, that's why I guessed it would be on this little island.
No, an odd animal.
Oh, it's okay. So something real weird. Okay. Let's see here. Oh, I don't know. I'd find a cow, something.
How about wallabies?
Okay, I wouldn't have guessed that.
They can be found here living pretty much naturally as they do in the wild. When Scotland may seem to be the last place you'd expect to find a huge population of wallabies roaming free, these marsupials native to Australia have managed to thrive here. And their origins in these strange lands are rather colorful. So yeah, if you look up, there's tons of pictures of these guys.
Wallabies.
There's a giant colony of them. And they've spread through the UK. There's a couple different spots you can see them, but this is the biggest colony of wallabies.
Aren't they from Australia, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so.
Generally, rainforest or forest animals, depending on the species of wallaby and stuff like that.
How are they managing in the... Well, I guess Australia's cold, too.
So, remember, the UK doesn't get nearly as cold as, like... Even though we're on the same, like... What is it?
True. Lateral? Latitude.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah, latitude. Longitude's up and down.
Okay. Even though we're same latitude as most of the UK, like here in Ohio, they do not get our winters.
Gotcha.
So it's still warm enough for them to thrive.
So with ocean currents and jet streams, things like that, keeps the weather more mild.
Yep. So imagine you're just walking through, you don't know this exists, and you're walking through, and you know what a wallaby is, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They look like
little kangaroos.
Yes.
They're not quite, but.
Rocco's Modern Life. He was a wallaby.
Yes. So imagine walking through, like, a nice scenic shoreline in Scotland, and you look out on this little island, and there's a kangaroo looking at you, and it hops away back into the forest.
Yeah, that would be odd.
Do you think anybody would ever believe you?
Well, I would probably think, oh, that's a weird rabbit.
Oh, they're big. I mean, they're not tiny. They're just smaller than kangaroos, which are massive.
Right, yes. Yeah, well, kangaroos can be like us.
It's bigger. They can be like 6 foot.
Gosh. Well, you know, I'm 6 foot.
You have a 6 in your height, but it has a 4 in the beginning.
It's a 5. Come on.
Yeah. In 1940s, during the height of World War II, Lady Erna Kopari bought the wallabies to the island. She had a small holiday bungalow for her backyard menagerie at her home and released them into the wild on her private island. So she went to Australia, and she took these guys, like bought a bunch of wallabies.
Yeah.
Took them home. And just released them on her little private island where she had a bunch of other exotics.
Okay.
She's just like, you know, it's just one of my new pets. In the ensuing years, a few wallabies from their initial release managed to breed into a fairly healthy, self-sustaining population. And this has caused some amount of debate of whether they potentially pose a threat to the native ecosystems.
Mm.
Although there is no concrete evidence of this, while those who have called for these out-of-place animals to be culled... Which is
called killed.
Killed.
C-U-L-L-E-D.
Yes.
Called.
They have proven to be a hit with the visitors who boat out to the edge of the island just for a chance to glimpse these unusual denizens.
I mean, if it's on an island, I mean, what's it really? Is it hurting anything?
They are. Wallabies can swim.
Okay.
So there's, I think the fear is them getting out.
Yeah, right.
And continuing to breed, which they have. I don't know if there's 3 different populations in the UK. They, as far as I know, the UK has such a damaged
ecosystem
and it's missing tons and tons of species.
Yes.
I don't know if there's anybody. So like half the deer species in the UK are non-native invasive.
Okay.
Like, oh gosh, they have like water bucks and stuff like that. They have deer that are from like Asia that are just running around out there. So I don't know if there's many natives that they would be taking the niche of.
These wallabies, you're saying, okay?
I don't think they should be let out, but on an isolated island under control, and it doesn't matter anymore because now they're a public favorite, so whatever whatever politician is the one that's like, well, we're going to go and kill all these wallabies.
They're going to be voted out.
That would be the end of their career.
Yep. A political suicide.
Yes. And the local community makes quite a bit of money of like doing the boat tours out to them and stuff like that.
Okay.
As far as I know, you have to have like special permission to go onto the island to go see them. But they do allow it for photographers and that kind of stuff.
So they're somewhat controlled or managed.
Yeah. They're watched over pretty hard.
Okay.
Unbelievably, there is yet another odd island in the UK under rule by wallabies. A whole different sect of wallabies.
Another wallaby island.
In the 1980s, the Dublin Zoo in Ireland sought to relocate some of their sustainably growing population of wallabies. So in their zoo, they had a pretty good, healthy population. They're like, well, we don't want to get rid of them. We like having, you know, a nice captive breeding population of all of these. So that we're going to find another location to house like half of them so they can keep breeding and keep reproducing and stuff like that. So, which had gotten way too big for their house at the zoo. It's finally decided to take seven of the animals to this tiny 600-acre privately owned island called Lambay Island, located in the Irish Sea right off the coast of Dublin. So this is actually an island in the ocean. Not huge. I mean, 600 acres. So, I mean, that's a lot of acreage, but it's not a massive island.
Yeah.
They were taken to the highest point and simply released into the wild.
Nice.
While it was worried that they would soon perish in the cold climate, the wallabies defined these expectations by proceeding to thrive there. Indeed, the wallabies have adapted to the colder weather by growing extremely thick coats compared to their Australian cousins.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And they have seemed to take advantage of available food just fine.
So developing new phenotypes.
Mm-hmm. Even going as far to feed off of any hay left out for the cattle during the winter when resources are more scarce.
Hmm.
There's cattle on the island too.
Okay.
There's like a little farmed island and stuff like that. There's people out there. There's a huge population of wild wallabies.
Nice.
The wallabies have drawn in visitors in droves. And one guide by the name of Ian Gurness has said that rather strange and jarring sight. You don't really believe it until you see it. The first time I came out here, I was like, what in the blank is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about the first time he walked out
and seen wallabies running around in the UK.
It's estimated that there are around 50 red-necked wallabies inhabiting this island. And although they have been a hit with tourists, hoping to get a glimpse of the shy and elusive creatures, there's concern that the animals could pose a threat to the many seabirds that rely on the place, as well as other natural indigenous ecosystems. There have also been worries that they could make the 2.5 miles swim to the mainland, becoming a potential threatening invasive species.
So is the problem with these guys is like their aesthetics? You know, they got like half-rebuilt cars all over the lawn and...
Yeah.
Oh, you said red-necked.
Red-necked.
Wallabies. Indeed. Oh, okay. And they're talking about us.
I was like, yeah, I think my whole time growing up we had three cars that never ran.
It's just how we are.
I think they're down to two.
I don't know why we're like this, but...
It's a redneck thing. It's what we collect.
Right. It has potential. It has potential, the half-beaten, rusted-out car in the yard.
My dad said that whole time growing up.
I grew up with it, too.
Despite these concerns, there have been little done to try to manage the wallaby population, except for the occasional call when their population seems to be growing too fast for its own good too rapidly.
Because
they have no natural predators, so they can explode in they population thrive. Very yeah. well. Because they are like kangaroos, but they're a smaller variety, so they are much more predated on in Australia.
They look like kangaroos, but they breed like rabbits.
Yeah. I'd rather deal with these guys than a kangaroo.
Yeah, me too. They're... much more manageable.
I highly suggest everybody look up the pictures of this island because it looks like the island from Jurassic Park. It's like from space or from not space, from the sky.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you're like expecting dinosaurs and it's a 2-foot-tall wallaby. Heading to the Wallaby Island are several mysterious islands roamed by...
I don't know, Kiwis?
Feral horses.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So you're out in the ocean. You stop at this island and it's, you know... There's not many mammals on islands, and there are mammals. So mammals tend to get really small in island environments.
Yep.
And other animals tend to get big.
Big, yeah. So, island gigantism?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it?
And it's also called island dwarfism.
You're right, okay.
So the typical body plan, what we say is, it seems to be, from the animals we find on these islands, the ideal size is about 200 pounds.
Okay.
So animals that are much smaller than that will get up to that size. And animals that are much larger than that will start shrinking down.
Huh.
We've seen it with everything from mastodons and mammoths, like the pygmy mammoths out on the, you know, off the Californian coast on the islands, which we know that they were separated because they were down, I think, to like 800 pounds, which is a tenth of the original size.
That's crazy.
But there were new ones that would swim out to the island. So they had both fossils
of
mainland mammoth and then the pygmy mammoth.
Right.
So yeah, horses on islands. So such islands in Carroll, North Carolina, speak of a land just off the coast that boasts a thriving population of several hundred rare banker breed of horse, which is descended from the original coastal Spanish Mustang.
Neat.
It has been rather a mystery of how these horses actually got there. And the main theory is that they were abandoned by the 16th century Spanish conquistadors or were survivors of shipwrecks. So they really don't know who dropped them off or how they got there.
It'd have to be one or the other, though. Like, it has
to
be.
That's what, because of what they're from, they know right. that the Spanish were involved.
Yeah.
Or at least that somebody had Spanish horses.
Okay, fair, yeah.
So it doesn't mean that necessarily it was an English ship that went down. They just happened to have Spanish horses.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it was a Spanish breed horse that these guys descended from.
Either way, it was a human a reason why these horses are there.
Yeah, and then we've talked about in the show, too, the horse latitudes.
The horse latitudes?
Yeah, so near the equator, they call them the horse latitudes because the ships would get stuck.
Oh, that's right, yes, yes.
So they would just make all the horses jump ship.
That's right, yep, I remember now.
Normally, they would do it by islands.
Uh-huh.
Like, if they've seen an island, they're like, all right, it's time to get rid of the horses. We haven't moved in 3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the horses, you know, they had a chance. So there are just, you know, there's a myriad of islands out
chance.
There.
You ever remember the movie, I know you've seen it, Road to El Dorado?
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck in that boat, mm-hmm. and they got the horse with them?
Yeah, it's better than Life of Pi.
I never did see that one, but I remember what I remember talking about it.
I'll take a lion, or I'll take a horse over a tiger.
A tiger, yep. Oh, gosh.
I know the horse may kill me, but ain't going to eat me.
Right, yeah.
Like tiger, that's all he's thinking about. Anyways, back to the conquistadors. What are their reasons for their presence? The Long Island isolation makes them one of the only remaining populations of purebred banker horses in the world.
Wow.
So this breed would probably be extinct if it wasn't for these populations.
Yeah.
Untouched and unchanged from the original Spanish horse for centuries. The mysterious horse have been quite an attraction, and anybody interested in seeing them can get close-up arrangement tours through several of the island like operations devoted to the horse viewing of the island.
So is it a sustainable population then, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it's 400 or 500 years old.
How do they maintain that without like genetic bottlenecking?
So there is probably some straight line breeding.
Yeah.
Which is, for everybody at home, a fancy word for incest.
Straight line breeding?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like it's a family tree with no branches.
Right, yeah.
And that's what it is.
No, I get it. I guess if I'm ever in that situation and I have to use...
That's the fancy term, straight line breeding. No, that there were enough wild horses, or there was enough horses that had been abandoned there several different times.
Oh, okay. I forget new genetics.
They were so much unrelated.
Yeah.
That as long as they could get up to a number quick enough, which if they had no predators, probably wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
And... Mustangs themselves, the horses are really good at about genetic regulation.
Okay.
Where they kick all the young males out and they have to fight. So a whole generation may be fathered by one male.
Okay.
But the second he's too old, a whole different, probably unrelated male comes in, kills him, and fathers the whole next generation.
Gotcha.
So you have females that are only like 25% related. Then.
Right.
So that's some of the way. You have to have enough to start. And you have to get up to a number quick enough before the genetic bottleneck becomes an issue.
The tree needs to branch.
Quick.
It needs to fork soon, quickly, before it branches out.
Yeah. Eventually, as alluring as the herd of these horses were on the Sable Islands off the coast of Halifax, Nova Scotia in Canada, the island itself was a low-lying, crescent-shaped strip of treeless land made of pure sand, only about 26 miles long and dotted with sparse grasses, plants, and shrubs. Does not seem like some sort of place you might expect to find a herd of majestic horses flying free among the dunes. But there are an estimated on this island in Nova Scotia over 400 wild horses.
That's a lot.
So there's look at pictures of these guys. There's not much on this island. It's pretty much a big sandbar.
And they're protected, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Both these horses are protected.
I wonder, but I bet
you can go see them.
I bet you somebody has like a few of them in their stable.
I think both have had collections.
Okay.
As in collecting events.
Okay.
Monitored collecting events.
Yeah.
For like breed heritage and all that stuff. I'm sure the South Carolina horses have been collected some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess what they do. Like they do this with rhinos and stuff like that, is they'll take males that are generally too old to compete for females anymore.
Right.
So they're out of the breeding pool anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But in captivity, they may, you know, presented with the female without competition.
Gotcha.
So they still can breed just in nature, in the wild. They're not going to beat a young Mustang.
Yeah. They're not the ones reproducing anymore.
Yeah. So 400 wild horses. The descendants of these horses were introduced to the island sometime in the 18th century, after which they had gone on to become their very own unique breed. Although interest in the Sable Island roaming horses is high, the land has been designated as a national park by the Canadian government. and the sable breed of horse classified as the official horse of Nova Scotia.
That's pretty cool.
For anyone who wishes to get a glimpse of these animals, must first secure government permission to do so. So they are very strict about coming to visit these horses.
Not good. Isn't there an island too off of, is it Virginia Beach maybe, that has horses?
I just said South Carolina.
South Carolina. They're right beside each other.
They're not super, there's North Carolinas in between them.
Right. So I think there's another one then.
There probably is.
Virginia Beach. Where
I know there's a beach you can swim at in the Carolinas with horses.
Yeah. I think it's Virginia Beach.
It could be Virginia Beach.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. I don't know. Because I think...
Feral horses are pretty common.
Okay.
I mean, not pretty common, but anywhere humans have been,
right,
there's probably feral horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just now we're in the cycle. There'll be like feral cars, you know, roaming around. Well, the self-driving ones, of course.
I know what you meant. Yes. It just made me...
I mean, it's our wave of it.
So, monkeys and wallabies on islands.
Okay.
Are not
horses and wallabies.
Horses and wallabies.
You gave it away.
I gave it away. The next one's monkeys.
Okay.
Situated off the coast of South Carolina and the United States is Morgan's Island, a 4,489-acre marshland island, which is uninhabited by humans.
Ooh, nice.
But now you're going to recognize this name in a second. I want you to tell me where you recognize it from.
Okay.
In 1979, Puerto Rico's Caribbean Primate Research Center. Do you remember what that's from?
Is that where the chupacabra?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the same island from the chupacabra episode with all the monkeys.
Uh oh. Were they doing genetic manipulation there? Is that where the chupacabra came from?
So this was specialized in researching diseases that monkeys and humans both get. So this research center in 1979 experienced an outbreak of the hepatitis B virus among its Southeast Asian rufous monkeys when they were housed for the purpose of developing the polio vaccine. Some of these monkeys escaped and caused an outbreak among humans as well. And the Puerto Rican government desperately reached out for help in relocating some of its monkeys. Mm. So Morgan's Island was offered. So this isn't the exact same island, but this is the same monkeys from the island in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
So these are the chupacabra military messed with monkeys. So the Puerto Rican government desperately reached out for help for relocating some of its monkeys. Didn't want to kill them. Just like they need a place to live. And they're infested with all kinds of diseases that we did. So you got any place we can put these monkeys? Like, oh, yes. We have Morgan's Island was offered as a refuge for these animals. And around how many monkeys do you think they first took over there? I'm Puerto Rico calling you U.S. Hey, you got an island or anywhere we can store some of our monkeys? Well, how many monkeys do you think it is?
I'm going to guess a number. I'm going to guess higher than it should be. Because overall, this is just sad. This is what we're doing. But 400.
You're very close. It has a 4 in the number.
4,000?
1,400.
1,400. Oh, my gosh.
Were moved to begin their new life on this island.
So we...
where the population quickly grew to nearly 4,000 monkeys. And that seems to be about the stable population, because it's still about 4,000 monkeys today, which is a lot of monkeys.
Yeah. Oh, so that's just 1,400 just that they moved of monkeys that were experimenting on with like horrible diseases and stuff.
Mostly AIDS and polio.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, yeah. Our CDC and our healthcare system and all big pharma is really like doing good things. This is disgusting.
This is probably a big spark of, we talked about in the Chupacabra episode that this happened like right before some of the first flap of Chupacabra sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And the island was just like, I think it was 2 or 3 miles off the coast in Puerto Rico.
Gosh.
So it was off the coast, but it wasn't crazy.
It's not that far, though, in relative.
And monkeys, depending on the species, which I believe rufous monkeys are very good swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
Some monkeys are really good divers, where they get half of their protein from the bottom of rivers and stuff like that.
Dang.
It's confused a lot of times with great apes, which great apes aren't great swimmers.
Okay.
I think orangutans out of all the great apes are the best swimmers, but if you look at where they live in flooded forests and Borneo and stuff like that.
They got to learn.
Chimps and gorillas is where I think are very, very dense. The joke is always that they can't swim. Like if they fall in the water, they'll drown.
Uh-huh.
I think they can a little bit, but I think they get exhausted very quickly and then drowned.
I could see a gorilla being so, because they're just
they're thick. Dense. They're dense animals.
I could see them getting in the water, just sinking like a stone, like a
hippo. They don't have massive lungs. So like horses, horses are great swimmers. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. And one of the reasons they're great swimmers is they have extremely massive lungs. So they kind of inflate themselves.
Big floating device, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So Morgan's Island remains a federally protected zone with no visitors allowed and only outside access the researchers who tag the monkeys and take some of them from time to time for biomedical research on the studies of diseases such as AIDS, polio, and a few others that the monkey colony is infested with.
Screw that. They're probably there still. They're just moved the operation to that island so no one can go there and see what they're studying on them. It'd be my guess.
There are now administrated by the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources and is often used by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, who see it as sort of an outdoor laboratory.
NAID.
Although the monkeys are mostly wild and free-ranging with little efforts to manage and control them, there is some food, water, and veterinary care provided to these animals by the government on occasion. Although no visitors are allowed on the island, the monkeys are a popular sight for passing boaters and or fishermen who enjoy watching the antics of these strange, disease-ridden primates.
Jeez, that's disgusting. I don't know if...
I don't think... So here, I want to say this before... I don't think a lot of the people that are going to look at them realize where these monkeys came from and what's happening.
Yes.
They just know a couple miles off the coast.
You can see some monkeys.
There's an island full of monkeys that the government takes care of.
If I'm not, I could be wrong or misremembering this, but for some reason, I feel like when they were doing the trials for all the crap that happened in 2020, I don't want to get into it, but I feel like they said they weren't doing the gain of function research. They asked him on... Our Dr. Fauci, they asked him on trial if we were conducting gain-of-function research. He said no, but if we were doing it, it would be done. I thought he said South Carolina in a, like, regulated facility.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if this is...
Before they moved off the coast, it was, what, Montauk. There's several CDC and other organizations that have South Carolina and islands because there's a lot of islands.
Right.
I don't know if it's because it's the best place for it. It's just there's a lot of real estate. There's a lot of uninhabited islands.
And you can't just, people can't stumble onto it.
Yeah, but here is my idea. So these monkeys have been on here. There's occasionally monkey sightings in Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
This island is right in the hurricane's path.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So how many monkeys get blown to the mainland or swept off to the mainland
mm-hmm.
every year?
Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Horribly infectious diseases.
Remember, too, that story? I was a couple years ago. It was here in Ohio. That truck that overturned and all
with
those
all the monkeys
monkeys escaped.
And they're like, yeah, we got them.
Yep, we got them all.
Like, how many escaped? How many did you get?
We got them all.
The same number. Yep. Don't worry.
There was big story, and then nothing happened of it. Like, no, it swept under the rug.
Yeah. So there are also tons of more monkeys. Like in Florida, there's a couple islands in the Everglades that have monkeys.
Mm-hmm. Monkey Islands.
I think that's the name of the place on the tour. Island.
I wouldn't be shocked.
And they're not friendly.
Well, no.
We'll take our ad break, and then we'll be right back.
Well, things are looking good for the Jamboree this year so far.
True, but I wonder if there's anything else that can make this event even more awesomer.
Well, there's really only one person that could be the judge of that.
Hey, that's a great idea. Let's give him a call.
Two Whoops and Tree Knocks. Sasquatch is there.
Hey guys, what's up?
Well, we're going over the schedule for the Jamboree, but we wanted to see what you think.
Alright, well, let me take a look here real fast. Okay, so the VIP tickets are $50 a piece, and that gets you into the Friday night dinner and meet and greet with the speakers and special guests. Monster costume contest? Well, that looks good. A free family room with activities for the kids? Well, that's outstanding. A Bigfoot calling contest. Of course, it looks like you're going to have a lot of food. Oh, good, and you'll have the craft vendors back. Last year, I actually found a Squatchtopus. Well, let's see who the speakers are this year. Oh, you have Connor and Alexis Fiden and Randy Bauer. Ron Murphy, outstanding. Oh, good, you guys will be speaking. Which J-Clone is going to be there? That's my question. And Tony Merkel as well. Oh, good, you're going to have Jake Dressel back. He was excellent last year. And Brian Wolf. Why does that name sound familiar? Well, I have to tell you, gentlemen, having gone to a number of these events, this looks like it's going to be one of the best ones of the year. Say, will Tiny Toes be there?
Tiny Toes?
Yeah, the little guy that was there last year.
Oh, you mean Paul.
Yep. Tiny Toes will be there as well.
Tiny Toes.
Cool. Well, this all sounds fantastic, guys. and I'll look forward to seeing you there. Until then, Squatch Dust!
Bye!
Oh, that Sasquatch.
Remember, take a kid fishing.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, home essentials, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online now through July 18th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Feature anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio. They're always donating gear.
They just took, I think they just did more trout fishing and all kinds of stuff for
kids. I did just see some pictures of that too, yeah.
Always got kids out doing stuff.
Mm-hmm. So get your kids outdoors, teach them to fish. Teach a kid to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime.
You want to join it or you want your kids to join it or you want to donate to it, links below.
Right.
Great organization, great people that run it.
Absolutely.
We help with it on occasion and very enjoyous people to be around.
Agreed.
All right. Next one. This is one that we've talked about in the show a lot. A lot.
Okay.
So you're going to the Amazon River. And, you know, Amazon River is a pretty fascinating place full of unique wildlife.
Oh, yes.
The biggest mammals generally, though, are like tapirs and stuff like that. Anybody doesn't know is like an elephant pig that's, you know, pretty aquatic.
Mash up.
Yeah. They get pretty big, 400 or 500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You're scrolling through, and a 5,000-pound behemoth bumps your boat.
Giant ground sloth.
Who is it?
A manatee?
Pablo Escobar, there are manatees in the Amazon, but they're Amazonian manatees.
Oh, okay.
They are supposed to be there, though.
Oh.
Pablo Escobar had a, let's just talk about this story, because islands don't have the only control of weird, out-of-place animal populations. The middle of the rainforest can be. Perhaps well-known are the hippopotamuses running around down in South America in the country of Colombia.
So Pablo's hippos.
Mm-hmm. Here, the notorious drug lord Pablo Escobar built his bloody empire on cocaine and wove his region of terror, ultimately being responsible for tens of thousands of deaths.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's more than average.
More than average. In the 1980s, Escobar built his own ranch and estate in a rural area in Antigua? Antigua? In addition to his collection of vintage cards, concrete sculptures of dinosaurs, which he wanted scientifically accurate dinosaurs of the time. He had a giant concrete garden of them.
If you were a drug lord.
They were full size.
Oh my gosh, it's you.
And besides the classic cars, I don't care. I mean, I like a couple, but I don't want a classic car collection.
No, you wouldn't. You want more classic animals collection.
And an assorted menagerie of animals, complete with elephants, giraffes, exotic birds, and 4 hippos. So I'll tell you his own little thing. Like, so it was most of the zoo was for his daughter.
I was going to ask you, was that like a passion of his own, or
he liked animals?
Yeah.
He liked animals. He was not a good person. Let's make that very clear. Pablo Escobar killed a lot of people.
Right.
In front of his kids and stuff like that.
We're
like,
separating the man from the.
But his daughter actions. Really liked animals even more.
Okay.
So he couldn't go into like zoos and stuff like that. So he started building his own zoo. So like he loved African megafauna, elephants, giraffes, hippos, like the big.
I mean,
stuff.
Who doesn't? Come on.
Yeah, just most of us don't have to spend $4,000 on rubber bands a week for money.
Well, I know, right? Gosh.
So, so it was a private zoo. His daughter once, though, asked for a unicorn for the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was like 6 or 7. So your dad is Pablo Escobar, one of the richest men and scariest men in the world. You ask him for a unicorn for your 7th birthday for your zoo.
Yeah.
What do you think he does?
Got a horse, and
he didn't do that.
Well, and then he had it done. He got a horse, and he probably had someone sew on some kind of horn to it.
Close. Now he turned to like 3 or 4 of his high level goons, and said, "Go find my daughter a unicorn." And they were like, "We don't know if they're real or not."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Go find my daughter a unicorn." Guess what they did? They went and looked for a unicorn.
They get a rhino?
No, I don't think they ever found it. I think they found it like a really pretty white horse, and I think she was fine with it. So they were like, because I think they were basically like, we'll keep looking for the unicorn, but here in the meantime, so she can have something to ride around.
Here's an old unicorn. The horn just fell off.
Yeah, it's reproductive, like antlers.
Yeah.
So the private zoo often did show off to the local people who were all allowed to have free access view to the animals. So the local towns.
See, it's not so bad after all.
And it was all quite the status symbol in the day. So it was mostly using it to like show off to the people. This is how powerful I am.
Right.
I have a small elephant herd.
Yeah, come and check it out.
These hippos, they're terrified of me.
What if he was running like local ads like, come see my zoo?
I think what happened is that his goons would go through town and say, Escobar wants 12 people at the zoo today.
Oh, gosh.
It's you.
But imagine, though, if
he's like
would.
Dressed up like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, like P.T. Barnum. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I was spinning the sign.
Maybe
like
we'll do a Pablo Escobar Caesars. Shirt like that.
Yeah.
JB, there you go.
He's just advertising his own zoo.
Pablo Escobar Zoo.
Yeah. I'm trying to get out of the drug thing. He's trying to shift. He just was in too deep. He couldn't get out.
So in 1993, Escobar's estate was raided by the Colombian police, and Escobar decided to go down fighting, falling in a hail of bullets out of Scarface. Mm. In the ensuing years, though, his abandoned zoo fell in despair, and calls began to come in from the locals of seeing strange lumbering animals with extremely large mouths and small ears stalking through their riverways, killing local fishermen.
Oh, gosh.
So this is years later.
Yeah.
And these villagers, a little bit further away, didn't know what a hippo was.
Right.
And they're like, there's monsters in the river. They're humongous, and they're biting boats in half and crushing people.
And they're right.
They are monsters. Especially if you don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think hippos are the deadliest animal. Like, they have the most kills.
More than the next big five put together.
Yeah. Which, who would have ever, that's, you would never think of a hippo.
It's always herbivores.
Yeah.
And they're big, dumb, panicky, territorial.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elephants aren't nearly as territorial. They'll still kill you.
Yeah.
I think it's water buffalo are the one of the big five. And they'll kill you just because they'll kill everything.
Huh.
They'll pick fights with whatever. Anyways. So yeah, these locals are calling in reports of like monsters to the local government. So this is, you know, many years after the original Pablo Escobar's hippos.
And, yeah.
You know. Can you imagine that? Like, just, and there, some of these are far away, up to 115 miles away from his estate in the rivers. And you don't know what, you are a South American adult man, fisherman your whole life. You've been on the river your whole life. You have no idea what a hippo is. The only reason we know what a hippo is, because we have the internet.
And zoos, yeah.
I mean, but we lived rural nowhere.
Oh, we would never,
we'd
know.
Never know what a hippo or a giant squid is or anything like that.
Uh-uh.
So you're expecting like tapirs and manatees or your big river dolphins, right?
Yeah.
And this giant, small-eared, mega-mouth monster comes out and bites your kayak in half and is eating your buddy.
Yeah. No, that would...
Well, how would you tell... What would you tell somebody?
Yeah, exactly. They're monsters.
I mean, yeah, that's what, like, they have giant mouths and teeth.
Yeah.
Tiny ears.
Imagine just seeing the little ears and the tiny head, like, and the eyes just pop up. Like, you don't see the mouth yet.
What is that? And then the whole thing.
Yeah. That, you see the videos of them eating like a whole pumpkin or a watermelon.
I've seen the videos of them eating people.
Well, I let's stick to the watermelons. But I mean, they crush it like it's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. There was one, I think just 2 years ago, that had like basically picked up a 4-year-old kid in his mouth. Didn't kill him, but ran around. It looked like he swallowed him. He just held him in his mouth and then spit him back out.
Oh my gosh, that would be frightening. Jonah and the whale.
So
Billy and the hippo.
So yeah. And of course, it turned out that all these monsters were Pablo Escobar's hippos. And this confused a lot of people because they had gone feral. They escaped their enclosure and gone feral, which there are still several of them that live on Pablo Escobar's like land.
Okay. They just never left.
So some of them just hit the first waterway and stayed there.
Yeah.
Some of these first early accounts were a full 155 miles away from his estate.
Well, they're really branching out.
And they have since migrated all over the place. They do not know how many hippos there are. I've seen estimates as low as 40.
So same situation, though. How did they not genetically bottleneck? Or do hippos just live? They have a pretty long lifespan.
They have a pretty long lifespan. Okay. So they may not even be getting to that point yet. So this is probably, let's see, 93, maybe second generation, third generation hippos, maybe.
Okay.
Because... I'm going to assume, I don't know their actual sexual maturity, but if it's close to elephants, you know, 7 to 10 years.
And eventually they'll die off, right?
Maybe not. It just depends on, how fast they breed and stuff like that. They may, because they're isolating themselves.
Yeah.
Into like floats or bloats.
What's that mean?
It's just what their groups are called.
Oh, okay.
So they're isolating themselves from one male running a bunch of females and stuff like that.
Okay,
and juvenile females would normally go to other pods. If it happens enough, they may not genetic bottleneck immediately, or they may have some issues, but they may get over them.
Okay.
Depends. Anyway, so the lowest estimates are like 40 animals, and I've seen as high as 500 to 600 animals.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of hippos.
Because it's the Amazon.
Yeah, it's
huge. How are you going to count them?
You can't.
Everything's water.
We haven't even discovered all the Amazon.
Yeah. So these giant marine, or not marine, these semi-aquatic animals hiding in the Amazon, the biggest wetland that's on Earth.
Right.
And how are you going to count them?
Right, you can't.
When they're in the water.
Who is it you were saying that they counted beavers like fish when it comes to Lent? You know what I'm talking about? Weren't we having that conversation before? I wonder if they count hippos in South America as aquatic.
Who was it? Somebody did count. Like, it was weird. I don't know. Was it beavers?
Yeah, it's beaver.
It's tail. It was beaver tail.
Something. I don't remember.
Which a lot of people eat beaver tail.
It hurts really good.
I've used it for bait. I've never eaten it, but.
I want a beaver hat.
Yeah, I do. Bad. All right. So, yeah. So, of course, there's been quite a bit of concern with the potential negative impacts on the native ecosystems of hippos and the threats they pose to humans. So this is the first one on this list so far. I mean, the disease-ridden monkeys.
Well, yeah.
They run up and bite you. That's going to suck for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Hippos like killing people.
Yeah.
There's not many, they're
deadly.
There's not many animals I'd say. I don't think they like it. They really are territorial.
That's more,
and they
I think,
do not mind killing people.
That's more accurate, I'd say.
Like, horses can kill you so easily.
Mm-hmm.
But it normally, even a wild horse, it takes a lot of work to get up to that point for them to turn around and decide, I'm going to kick you to death.
Right. They're not built that way. Hippos are just like, I need you dead.
You are breathing too close to where I am breathing.
Yeah.
And that's a violation of the law.
They might, I mean, who knows what happened in hippos' past? They might have went through some traumatic thing like chihuahuas. Maybe we were breeding them to sacrifice and eat.
Gosh, that's what pygmy hippos are.
Ah, see.
So in their native habitats, hippos are responsible for more deaths than any other wild African animal. The Colombian hippos have shown little reservation for crashing their teeth through farms and ranches for looking for food.
Hmm.
That's another big problem that they're having. They're running in with farms or farmers.
Just ravaging everything.
A lot of people don't realize hippos are like grass grazers on land.
Right.
The Amazon does not have a lot of that.
Okay.
It's a lot of vegetation, but the actual ground vegetation is very sparse.
Mm-hmm.
So for food, they're going onto farmers' lands and eating the whole crop.
Hmm.
So that's going to cause fights.
Problems.
Yeah. In one case, there was one hippo that was tracked and killed by a Colombian soldier because he caused so much public outcry. And all there were plans to kill off the other animals have since been put on hold indefinitely. So these guys have a lot of support.
Okay.
For the community. Some communities really love them. Some communities really hate them.
Yeah.
There have also been ideas of floating around of relocating them. They cannot legally be returned back to Africa due to the potential of spreading diseases. Africa will not let them back in.
I mean, that makes sense.
But yeah, that first idea was like, if we catch them and foot the bill, we'll fly them back to Africa.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd say just kill them.
Well, nobody's going to do that.
I mean, just get rid of them. I mean, more like saying, it's open season on them. It should be. You know what I mean? They shouldn't have any protection or nothing. If you see a hippo, you have the right to shoot it.
But the problem is with that, and I'm not saying it's wrong. The problem is it's going to cause confrontations.
With?
Hippos and people.
And people, yeah.
And then the hippos are going to get more violent.
Yeah.
Because you're not just going to shoot one in the head and drop it.
No, you better be a good shot.
Or a big gun. Their brain is not very big, and they have humongous skulls.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is going to happen more likely is you're going to wound one.
Make it mad.
And make it irreversibly upset with humans.
Yeah.
So I think that will kill far more people in the long run.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, what do you do? It's 6 one way, half a dozen the other.
Yeah. Although there are some have been actually caught and put into zoos. There have been way too many to fill zoos.
Hippos?
Yes.
Yeah.
So at first I'm like, well, okay, well, let's catch them. To put them in zoos, you know. We filled all the South American zoos.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Any other countries? Oh, Mexico. Okay, here, have some hippos. You just have them. We'll move them. We'll pay them. Okay. America, here, hippos. We have too many hippos.
Yeah, we're
full. So, like I said, that 40 number is, I think, ridiculous.
Yeah. I think low, ridiculously low.
I think it's 400 or 500, if not 1,000.
Yeah.
There's nothing eating them, and they can breed pretty fast.
Oh, you know what we should do? For the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
Have hippo burger?
Let's get a big hippo rotisserie, like a pig's rotisserie. Hippo rotisserie. Instead of like an apple in the pig's mouth, it's a giant watermelon in the hippo's mouth, and we need like a forklift to spin it.
So the first, another idea was castration.
Yeah, okay.
Because they're like, oh, we can't kill them because the people don't want them killed.
Oh, that won't make them mad.
Oh, no, it's chemical castration. Mm. It's not like putting a rubber band on him.
Right. Or it's, just lopping them off.
Yeah, it's chemical castration, which they do with some African wildlife in Africa.
How does that work? They eat something and it
it's a shot.
Oh, it's a shot. Okay.
Yeah. So they just knock them out. So they wait in the river when they're on land feeding. Hit them with the dart. Most of the time they don't hardly react because their skin's so friggin' tough. Yeah. They're just like, whatever.
The dart has the...
No.
Oh, okay.
The dart is just a sedative.
Oh, just to knock them out. Yeah. Okay.
And then, and then they chemically castrate them. Mm. So far, that really hasn't worked because they're having trouble, first off, IDing the hippos. They may be chemically castrating the same one 8 times.
Gotcha.
And they can become wary of people very quickly.
I imagine,
I said why they don't shoot them with rifles.
Yeah.
It's because the first dart, they're like...
Right. Wait a minute.
What was that?
Right, yeah.
The other idea was putting massive electrical fences in it to keep them out of areas. First off, it was way too expensive to carry out.
And it's not going to work.
They blew right through them.
Yeah.
For now, the hippos remain. Their population steadily growing. Here's a weird fact for you. Their sexual maturity has dropped to the age much lower than the African hippos.
Huh.
And so this is another, so that'd be a genotypical difference.
Yeah.
They're becoming sexually mature much younger.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's kind of a neat little change.
Although their future remains uncertain, Escobar's hippos continue to enjoy their new home.
I bet they do. Yeah, they're getting farm food and fishermen to eat all day.
Fishermen. Hopefully people are enjoying this episode, because I find it fascinating just to see what animals... And we've talked about some of these already in other episodes and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these hippos... For example, would have been they were a cryptid.
They were for years.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, the first like 3 or 4 years after his death, 155 miles away.
Yeah.
For us, that is Kentucky.
Yeah.
So it's in the middle of Kentucky.
Right, yeah.
So imagine if I had 4 hippos and I died battling the Colombian government. and then my hippos just got out. 3 years later, 155 miles, and there's a monster eating people in the Ohio River.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to think it's me.
Right. It was your
hippos. My hippos.
Right, exactly.
And we know what hippos are. And I'm not saying the natives obviously didn't know what hippos are. They were very, you know.
Right.
But there were chances that these fishermen in these villages never knew what a hippo was.
I'd say pretty dang good chances. Because I don't think remote villages in the Amazon have access to African fauna.
But it's not. It's Colombia. There's tons of cities and villages and towns.
And there's tons of rural places, like kind of like where we live, but even more so.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, it's not saying that anybody's dumb.
No.
But if you've never had the access to information on African megafauna in your home in South America, and you see a hippo or a moose or, you know, a water buffalo.
A monster.
That's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Hippos more so than any of them, because at least water buffalo kind of look like cows.
Right, hippos and Hitlers are the deadliest ones out of all those.
Yeah. Okay. So, you ready for some other ones? These ones are big. Moving to the United States, the picturesque Golden State Park in San Francisco, California. Often compared to the New York City Capitol Central Park, the urban park is sprawled over 1,000 acres of lush parkland containing museums, Japanese tea gardens, windmills, the Academy of Science, and miles of walking trails.
Nice. What's a Japanese tea gardens?
Mm-hmm.
Like they grow tea?
No, I think it's like a place to have tea.
Oh, okay.
Like how the rock garden down the road and stuff like that.
Yes, I love rock gardens.
It's like that.
Okay.
Like it's special, like it's made an area that's made to go enjoy tea in.
Okay. Cool.
I think they have like the little tables and everything like that out there.
We need a tea garden.
They were in Chicago. I have seen like the I've never been to one.
Yeah.
I've seen like seen the signs in the parks and stuff, like a tea garden this way.
Nice.
I'm assuming that's what it is.
It sounds pleasant.
It sounds like a joyous thing.
Right.
While there are a lot of birds and other animals to see here, most would not expect to see the massive animals. So we're in a park. This is a park. A University of Science, all that.
San Francisco.
What massive animal would you not expect to walk into?
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay. Massive, but I'm also guessing it's not deadly.
No. They can be.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person interacting with them. It determines how deadly they are.
I don't know. Buffalo?
You got it.
Really?
This park is full of American bison.
Oh, really? Shoot, okay. I thought of that video of that guy getting tossed by one.
Yeah.
Because he was freaking messing with it.
He's touching it. He's touching it. Yes. And I do think that's a problem is education, is it? People don't realize, because they kind of look like cows, but people think, like, I can go touch a cow, which you can't.
No.
If you don't know the cow, you can't just go up and touch a cow.
I mean, even...
I don't like cows, because I know a guy that was stomped to death by his own cows.
Own cow, that liked him. Even, like, I don't like really being around horses, and I know I'm safe, but I don't...
No, you're not, you don't know you're safe unless
you know
that horse.
Right, absolutely.
The only horse, I had many horses. Mm-hmm. I only ever trusted one.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
I'll make that clear.
Okay, fair. I guess I'm not around horses enough.
And but, I work for these horses, you know, hours and hours and hours every week. And there was one I knew would
kick me
the second she got the chance.
Yes.
And the other one I worked with so much, and that was my horse, Spirit. Like, I trusted Spirit. Like, mm-hmm. I let little kids ride her and that kind of stuff just because she was always very, very well-tempered and she liked Twinkies.
Yeah. Oh, fair. So you had a way to her heart.
Gosh, yeah. That was the same show. We had her at one show, and we were told she was too fat and too thin in the same day.
Interesting.
That shows you how judging is very opinionated.
Do you think?
I even said that during the show. Like, the other judge said she was too heavy.
Yeah.
Like, no, way too thin.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. No, so yeah. The Golden Gate Park was first created with the idea that it would be a monument to the Wild West. It was complete. The illusion was thought to bring a couple bison in were needed.
Okay.
They're like, yeah, we want a monument to the Wild West, you know, because it's kind of the end of the Wild West.
So what animal could we bring in to represent that?
Let's bring a couple bison.
Bison.
At around the time the park was first set up in 1871, rampant hunting had taken its toll on the populations of wild bison in the United States.
Okay.
And their numbers were extremely, extremely low.
Yes.
So it was thought that the bison in the Golden Gate Park could be a way for people to see these vanishing majestic animals up close and serve as a method of conservation.
That's so pretty
good ideas.
Yeah, especially back in the 1870s.
Everybody's killing everything.
Yes. Well, the U.S. government
was
ordered
subsidizing
the U.S. Army
to start murdering bison.
Just to kill them all. There's a very famous photo of a mountain of bison skulls they're standing on or in front of, posing in front of it. And the reason we did that was to cut off a food supply of the Native Americans.
Yeah. So this group was
horrible.
Like, we want to make a park about the Wild West, about all this stuff.
Okay.
Save this information. It needs some bison because bison are being wiped out.
Yes.
And we want to show... We want people coming out of the East Coast, when they come out here, these are worth protecting. Mm. These are amazing animals and stuff like that.
So okay, yeah, I like it.
It was good intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but beginning in 1891, a small herd of the animals were brought into the park and kept in a spacious paddock, after which more and more bison were slowly added from private and public herds. So this came out from everywhere. They saw what they were doing. They're like, well, I did the same thing in my state of Wyoming. You know, I saved 20 bison. I caught them because they were killing them all, and I was just keeping them breeding, so at least they didn't go away.
Right.
So I'd love to donate 4 or 5 bison, you know, out to your guys' herd. And, you know, here, same thing, you know, this public herd, like, you know, we have some young males we'll bring out.
Genetic diversity.
So it grew fast.
Okay.
With a captive breeding program was also started at the time. Over the years, the bison herd in the Golden Gate Park had been replaced on several occasions. So the animals are now not the direct descendants of the original herd, but are, you know, described as being the herd of all females. Nowadays, the bison can be seen grazing and lounging about, more or less free range. There are a couple fences just to keep them out of certain areas, mm-hmm. like the park, or not the park, sorry, the college and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah.
Just so somebody don't open a door and there's a bison there and they startle it. But they are pretty much free range bison, good. And they, you know, it's like I said, the whole herd has been changed out a couple times, so it's not the exact same herd.
Yeah,
but it was a neat idea. So bison were never native to that part of California.
Okay,
so it just is interesting. You don't expect a Golden Gate Park.
No.
I walk around and there's a herd of bison.
But this is probably one has the best origin story out of all the ones on the list.
Yeah, they weren't shot up with AIDS.
Yeah, and dropped on an island. Here you go.
The U.S. government would have done that, though. To the Native Americans.
What?
Left the only bison, the ones that they shot up with the AIDS.
Right, yeah, here you go. They probably did do that crap. I mean...
So, you want another mysterious animal?
Yes.
Also in San Francisco is known for their populations of unusual introduced animals that were just as jarring to come across as bison in a bustling city.
Okay.
So what's another animal that you would think, this one's a lot smaller.
Okay.
But you're in San Francisco, so you just stopped and you've seen a herd of bison in downtown. You're like, well, that's odd. So you keep walking and then this thing... These are brightly colored, and they're just like, where am I?
Flamingos?
Very close, very close. Parrots.
Oh, cool.
In 1990, a pair of parrots called cherry-headed corniers escaped captivity and took up residence in the famous Telegraph Hill. Oddly, though, the flock began to grow as other escaped couriers joined the original pair, and they began to have a breeding colony.
Nice.
With an estimated of over 200 of the parrots making their home by 2005. Although they mostly congregate on the Telegraph Hill, the wild parrots of San Francisco have managed to spread all over the city, making it a curious sight for the urban jungle. And they're everywhere.
Okay.
There's also some other large birds. I don't know if they've fully established, but there's cockatoos, which in Australia, if you get into some places, are basically like seagulls for us.
Okay.
Where they're just everywhere and they'll get in your stuff and eat everything. So they're like that. And these guys have actually become quite a problem for the very few remaining native bird populations.
That's kind of, what do they like? That's a cool bird though, at least, I guess. At least they look pretty.
See, playing favorites. I know. Based off of looks.
Could be worse though.
So, cherry-head couriers, which they are really pretty. They're very intelligent. And they have become like a big nuisance and some problem for both native wildlife and stuff. They're chewers.
Yeah.
So they'll eat like your drywall. They'll eat holes into your house.
Gnaw on
electrical cables.
Like rabbits and stuff.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. even a little worse because of how much smarter they are.
Mm-hmm.
And like they have even been seen like unscrewing bolts on things and stuff like that. So there's just a chance that the whole San Francisco infrastructure is going to crumble because of parrots.
Oh, it already has been.
But you just imagine parrots are unscrewing like fire escapes.
Yeah, my gosh.
So you try to get out in a fire and and everything drops.
And they're just sitting back watching. Yeah, laughing
like parrots.
What? So parrots are couriers?
Couriers are a type of parrot, yes.
Okay.
Green couriers are probably the most common one in pet stores. They're like normally $800-$900. But these are cherry-headed couriers, which are green with a big red head.
Red head, yep.
So speaking of parrots, another place one might not expect to find these birds is in Brooklyn.
Wow, both coasts.
Yeah. Yet there's also a flock of wild parrots that have taken up residence in Brooklyn College and other places around the city. Although it's not known for sure where exactly they came from, the prevailing theory has originated that it's from a shipment of pets that got loosed from John F. Kennedy International Airport in the 60s.
Hmm.
Yeah, which there was several hundred birds broke out of that shipment, wild-caught birds, before there was a lot of laws on that and stuff like that. So, yeah, just like we talked about with the shoe bills and stuff like that.
Yep.
You get out of an airport, somebody drops a box.
And you're gone the second you get a chance, a breath of freedom.
So, right now, there's a total of around 300 nests scattered around the city. They tend to build near utility pole transformers for the heat.
Do they knock them down?
No, they'll like build their nest right under them, though. No,
I mean, did the worker, do people, like, do they pass control?
Well, utility workers routinely remove the nest.
Okay.
And set up deterrent measures due to the potential damaging effects on the power grid that these parrots could easily have.
Yes.
But the tenuous parrots always come back. And they seem to always remove any measures put in to keep them out. The problem is they're really smart.
Right.
And so you put up like the normal bird spikes and stuff like that. And they're like,
They figure out a way around it.
If I unscrew that.
Right.
It'll just fall.
That's kind of nuts.
I got one more on this list and we'll do some quick mentions.
Okay.
Let's talk. This is probably the oddest one on this list. Outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Is a strategic missile base called Francis E. Warren Air Force Base, which houses the ICBM nuclear missiles and also has a rather strange, became a home of a wild herd of pronghorn antelope. The only known herd of urban antelope in the entire United States. The pronghorn at the base are likely find the location appealing as the high-speed security keeps unwanted predators away and visitors away. And the animals can be seen grazing and wandering around the outside of the various buildings, dorms, and offices here. This particular herd in recent years has been used to help save the endangered pronghorn populations in Baja California by using the females as surrogate mothers.
So the where are pronghorns originally from?
The West. They are native to Wyoming. You would never see them.
Okay.
They are so skittish.
They're really fast, aren't they?
They're extremely fast.
I thought so. I remember reading that in a zoo, like a fact about.
Yeah. And they're really good eyes. So they just don't like people.
Yeah.
And you just won't get close to them. So this is an odd one that there's herds of pronghorn. There's pictures and videos of them just walking in between and out of the dormitories and stuff like that.
That's pretty neat.
And they're not friendly.
Right.
But they're not super skittish anymore.
Right. They've kind of habituated a little enough to where they're comfortable enough.
Like they're using for surrogate mom. So like the Baja California, if they find a dead female with a baby, they'll bring it over here. And normally a mom will take it.
That's cool.
There's a lot of species of herbivores that'll do that. Dude, goats.
Oh yeah.
Like there's at the auction, there was a whole group of goats called nanny goats.
Yeah.
Which for whatever reason, they don't reproduce very well, whatever, but they really like taking care of kids.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say mom produces three kids. Two is typically the most that you want on an udder, yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll take one and give it to the other mom.
The nanny goat.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That kind of stuff.
A foster program.
Four is the most we've ever had, and it killed the mom.
Ugh.
But yeah. So honorable mentions.
Yeah, one of them would be mine from the very top of the episode.
Why don't you go ahead?
The wild flock of emus of Michigan.
Yes. Which I haven't heard anything about them in a while.
No.
I think they moved further away from the city.
Probably. I've... any semblance of intelligence they would, and animals are smarter than probably humans are.
Emus are really smart.
Like, naturally smart. I mean, like, how to live.
Yeah. So, yeah, wild flock of emus.
Yep.
In Michigan.
Yep.
Emus are invasive in several other places, too.
Okay.
Just around. Like, I know there's populations in... they don't ever, like, really take off.
But they maintain enough to...
they maintain enough.
Yeah.
I know rheas and emus are both invasive in Texas.
Okay.
Because there's big game ranches in Texas where they let them like kind of free range breed and you can still go out and shoot them. I don't know how much I agree with that as in a hunter, as in a trophy.
Right.
You know, if
you just don't tell anyone where you shot it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you come back with an ostrich you shot.
Right.
You like, went to Africa? Kind of.
Yeah.
It was hot.
That's where this ostrich is from. Yeah.
Yes, the ostrich is from Africa.
Yeah, that's where they're from.
His grandparents is from Africa.
Yeah, you just don't. Lying with statistics.
But, you know, Reyes reproduced incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
And in Texas, they've gotten off ranches and they're just out there. So
yeah,
there's any emus are too. Emus are much more intelligent than rheas and they have much like varied diet.
Okay.
So they're a little bit more adaptable.
Oh, okay. So they have a more chance to maintain. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Monkeys everywhere. There's monkeys all over the place. Like,
you talking just Texas or in general?
No, in general.
Okay. Is that on your list here?
Yeah, I'm just going to rapid fire in the ones we've talked about before.
Just making sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have another one you thought of?
No. I mean, not that I can think
of. I'm trying to stay away from like the full invasive ones. Like everybody knows the Asian carp.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm talking like these animals that if you didn't know there were wallabies in Scotland and you're just walking and you see one in the loch, like that's a monster or cryptid.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cryptid. Even though it's not big and scary.
I'd say the closest thing maybe is. well, it's not anymore, but that farm that used to have the kangaroo farm here and all, mm-hmm. like that's half an hour down the road.
I told you about the moose at the one on Mad River, right?
The moose?
Yeah.
You saw a moose?
We were on Mad River, which is a little kayaking river here in Ohio, our part of Ohio. And I looked up and there's a moose, a big bull moose, big antlers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right there. And I'm like, there's a moose. And Dad's like, there's no moose in Ohio.
Right.
And we pass it. He's like, I don't know what that is. I might get some moose. I'm probably eight.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bull moose.
Yeah.
And we're like, there's no way it's a moose. Like, there's no way it's a moose. We're in Ohio. There's no moose. We get out, and Dad drives up the road, and there's a deer and moose farm.
Oh, gosh. So one got
out. We could see them. No. The fence went right up to the river.
Oh, okay. So it's still contained.
He was still in the fence. He was just looking down at the people. I mean, it was hard to describe. He's like 30 foot up.
Yeah.
On like a cliff face.
Embankment. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just looking down at people kayaking, just
okay.
He wasn't like huffing or nothing like that. No. He just was
observing,
watching people go by in the river. That's probably wanting to be in the river.
That's pretty cool.
Because it was hot. So he's probably just like, I wish I could get down there.
Right. Yeah.
Because they had elk and everything else, and they had one pair of moose.
Nice. Okay.
Is there, Tegus, which are the big black and white lizards from South America.
Oh, okay.
They're invasive in Florida, but they are, in my opinion, invasive in Louisiana and Arkansas as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are seeing giant black and white lizards in Arkansas as cryptids.
Uh-oh.
I've seen them on the cryptid pages being like, I don't know what I saw. I was out deer hunting.
Yeah.
And tegus can be aggressive, but they're generally pretty docile. They want to be left alone.
Okay.
But they can bite, and if they bite, they'll probably remove. If they bite your finger, they'll probably take it.
Okay,
they're
strong bite.
They look like they're fat in the face. It's all muscle.
Muscle, yeah.
So yeah, and then one of the cryptid pages, like a bunch of people deer hunting in Arkansas. Yeah, this big black and white lizard stood up, ran into the river, and took off. Don't know what it was, 5-6 foot long.
Jeez,
that's a tegu.
Okay,
it's what it is.
I guess I don't know about them.
No, but. Why would you? Like,
right, yes.
So that's what I'm saying is it's, I guess that's the whole point of this episode is to show that these are all documented populations of these animals.
Right.
But if you don't know they exist or you don't know that they exist in your area and you're deer hunting in Michigan and a 5 foot tall bird runs past you.
Oh, yeah.
Or you're in Arkansas out fishing and a 5 foot, 6 foot long lizard, black and white, super colorful, you know, crazy looking, is just hissing at you as it's walking, eating a bird.
Yep.
Or you're in San Francisco walking through the park and you look over and there's a 1,200-pound bison staring at you.
That'd be sweet.
You're on a monkey island full of AIDS.
But right, yeah. If you just happen to drop there.
Well, you shipwreck and you're like, oh, I made it to land at least. And then...
Oh, there's wildlife here. There must be a lot of food.
It's deadly disease monkey island.
Right, yeah. Oh.
That is like a sci-fi movie if I've ever heard it.
Deadly disease monkey island.
Yeah. No, it's, so what do you think?
I mean, this is the definition, one of the definitions of a cryptid. And, you know, going through each of these examples you provided today, it was just shows what animals are out there or can be out there. It doesn't have to make sense. Just because they're not supposed to be there doesn't mean they can't be there.
And climate is a big one, I think, for the wallabies. Because wallabies are like, you know, all over Australia, tropical rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't ever think that they could survive in Ireland or Scotland or the UK.
Right.
And they're there.
And they're there, fine.
There's also some evidence suggests that there is a population here in the U.S. as well.
Well, after hearing these examples, why would that shock me?
And I have an idea that might be some of the Dogman sightings in New England.
Okay.
Because Dogman's kind of, depending on which Dogman version you get, it's kind of kangaroo-shaped.
See, yeah, and the angle in which you see it.
Yeah. They move weird. You know, they can be on all fours and then stand up.
Mm.
And then the phantom kangaroo thing is through the whole U.S. That's a whole cryptid in itself where they're just kangaroos are seen randomly. Right. Ohio, the map behind me has 8 or 10 famous kangaroo sightings.
Well,
and they are popular in the higher end exotic pet trade.
They escape from that farm.
And they kick you to death and then they're gone.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
I mean, imagine that's dogman attacks.
Or like
it's just a really big kangaroo.
Or like that video where the one has that guy's dog in a headlock.
In the lake.
And he goes over there and just punches it.
And he's like, oh.
It's like, oh, okay.
Never ever follow a kangaroo to the water.
Yeah, it was like they just try to pull you under.
They'll drown you.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. If they lose a fight with something, they'll go to the water and they'll put you in a headlock and just hold you down.
Wow. Crazy creatures.
Well, yeah, that's been this episode. Yeah. I have been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been J-Clone 23.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!